How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day, especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth, you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth, they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth, you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza. Melis.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast. Thank you for making us part of your daily routine Monday through Friday. We're here every day to be part of your routine, whether it's going to work, going to the gym, skipping work, skipping the gym, I don't know, whatever it is. We're here Monday through Friday, whatever it is. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for rating us 5 stars. Today, it is me, John Corrales, along with Sam Jam Packard, the Rain and Jays, talking about the Celtics beating the Detroit Pistons after a tough loss to the Toronto Raptors. Tonight, the Celtics got past Detroit 104-98. So we're going to dive into some of the winning plays by Marcus Smart. Nice game by Jaylen Brown. Isaiah Thomas being Isaiah. Rip Hamilton just... still talking, probably. Let's just do that. Let's start with that. Rip Hamilton, that halftime lasted, what, like an hour?
It was at least, like, no exaggeration, 20 to 25 minutes, which is maybe even a half hour. It was just, I don't even know if that's, it felt like 3 hours. He just kept on thanking everyone. Any person who came into contact with Rip Hamilton on his from being born to this day, he thanked in his speech, and it was miserable.
I want to thank that guy on the corner that made me a sandwich that one time. You know, like, that's great that you have your number retired. I wish I could have had that at any level of basketball, and I'm sure if I was in that moment, I would have been a little bit overwhelmed by the moment, but it's halftime. You got to spur this along. You got to, come on, speed it up. Unless you want to do it before the game or after the game or on not a game night, but at halftime, come on. And then he drops this veiled drug reference, which is, what the hell was he talking about? Where he said something about, yeah, you know, we did it the right way, the natural way, no needles. Whoa, whoa, whoa. What are you talking about, Rip Hamilton? Are you suggesting that other teams in the NBA in the 90s were putting needles in their players? What are you saying? That to me was, if there's any sort of breaking news out of this game, it's that Rip Hamilton insinuated that there was drug use at the time that he was playing.
I feel like that's a kind of a dirty little secret about the NBA that, and it wouldn't shock me if a bunch of players were on stuff like, I don't know what the banned substance would be, and I don't know enough about like how like a steroid or human growth hormone would work for NBA players, but it's a grind, and anything that would help recovery and help with just like feeling more prepared or like less sore after a win or after a game, you think it might happen in the NBA. So Rip Hamilton just saying that, like, yeah, we had basically a drug cocktail after our lockers after every game, and we didn't ask any questions. Big shout out to the training staff for the drugs.
Seriously, like that part of his speech, I hope that's not lost in all of this. That he basically hinted, insinuated, said that drugs were a part of the league at his time. And whether he took some or he's saying that the stuff in the cup was not the needle. And so I have no idea exactly what he was trying to say, but he's basically saying at some level that there was performance enhancing drugs in the league at his time, which I'm not naive. I'm not going to say that that never happens, because at every level of professional sports or any level of any sport, I'm sure that that stuff exists. And you look at some of these guys now as compared to what the league was, I'm sure that exists. But for Rip to just come out and say it, he just flat out was like, yeah, needles and stuff. That's, wow. Like, that was, to me, that's the biggest takeaway from this entire game.
If you think about some of the kind of the technical streaks that Sheed was on, maybe he had some roid rage back in those Pistons days.
Yes. Yes, that makes total sense. Except for his body was pretty terrible. And so maybe he was taking the steroids but not working out. So that's, it just made him exactly super like angry. Super angry, and it was like his balls shrunk. And he just got a lot of technicals, but he just never lifted any weights. And the trainer's like, please just lift it, just pick up this weight two times and you'll be huge. He's like, nah, screw it.
This may be sacrilegious for me to say, but KG sounds like someone who could be definitely on some sort of that would make him super intense and crazy.
The only performance enhancer that he was on was PCP. Like, that's, yeah. He was just on some other mental stuff. All right, that's enough of that. Let's get into some actual basketball here. The Celtics beat the Pistons 104-98 in a game that was really just terrible. Like, really just, ugh. I didn't like watching it. Nothing about this was entertaining, except for in the fourth quarter, there was a five-point play for the Celtics where Jaylen Brown hit a three, got fouled, and then missed the free throw, but Marcus Smart made a winning Marcus Smart play, jumped in for the offensive rebound, got fouled on that, and hit two free throws. So two guys with the reputation of not being able to shoot were the guys who solidified this win. Jaylen Brown from three, Marcus Smart from the line. So that was interesting to see.
Yeah, no, the ball movement in the second half was pretty atrocious. I think the Celtics, after having a pretty good first half in terms of that, they had 15 assists in the first half and only 7 in the second half. On that Jaylen Brown play, they saw Isaiah. They doubled Isaiah, and he was actually wasn't trying to jack up his own shot, which I think was some of a problem in that Toronto game. And he was able to find Al Horford, who found Jaylen Brown in the corner, and just that's how offense is made. It was night to see Jaylen knock down that shot, but it was just even better to see, you know, multiple Celtics touch the ball in an offensive possession, because there were sometimes after you go up 15 in the third quarter, it should not be this close a game, but the Celtics just played some really terrible offensive possessions, like one after the other, and they're just lucky that the Pistons are not a very good basketball team at this point, because the Pistons matched them for bad offensive possession for every bad offensive possession, and it's just, you're lucky in situations like that to have a player like Marcus Smart who can just kind of swing the game in the final minute and make sure that his team wins.
Yeah. I want to get into this whole fourth quarter offense for the Boston Celtics, because it's something that I was tweeting about incessantly Friday night. And it's when the Celtics lose games down the stretch, this is something that they do a lot. It's Isaiah and nothing else. They're everybody's just begging Isaiah to win the game. And other teams know that that's happening. And so they will blitz Isaiah off of picks, or they will throw bigger guys at him. And Isaiah, being who he is, will say, all right, fine, I will go at this and try to win this game for my team. But he's just not able to do that all the time. He's been amazing. We know that in the fourth quarter this season. But in the Toronto game and in tonight's game, teams are finding ways to take him out of the offense. And then in the fourth quarter tonight, let's pull up his fourth quarter numbers. 1 of 7. So defended pretty well. He still scored 8 points because he was 5 of 6 from the line. But 1 of 7, not a great shooting. Obviously, it was pretty terrible shooting from Isaiah in the fourth quarter. But we need the rest of the team to step up. We need them to run an offense. We need them to do what they do. And if they have to play 4-on-4, fine. But the Celtics need to run an offense, and they need to do things besides wait for Isaiah to get open or just rush out and give him the ball almost near half court with 10 seconds left on the shot clock. That's terrible. And they did that a lot. And obviously some of it is crediting Toronto for playing pretty good defense. But if you see your star player being just blitzed and double teamed like that, then other guys, Al Horford, Marcus Smart, Jay Crowder, those guys, Avery Bradley, if he ever comes back to play, ever.
It might happen tomorrow or against the Hawks.
Those guys, they need to step up.
It's kind of difficult. They definitely, you would want them to kind of move more off the ball and give Isaiah more options. But I feel like Isaiah, and this is very much like a nitpick because he's been amazing, but I think he, at points, has a hard time recognizing when he is being blitzed and double teamed, and he doesn't get it to the ball to the roll man nearly fast enough for the Celtics to kind of take advantage of that 4-on-3 situation. It's the type of defense we saw played against the Warriors when Curry was going crazy, and he was able to get the ball to Draymond, and Draymond was like the perfect playmaker to kind of just like make the right decision in that. I feel like the Celtics have a similar player in that. Horford, as such an excellent passer and playmaker, as the guy to catch that in that situation, I think he can really take advantage of it. But it feels like every time Isaiah gets blitzed, it takes him like 3 or 4 possessions of him getting blitzed to realize like his best way to get out of it. And it's problematic at this point because it seems like that will be the go-to solution for any team playing the Celtics in crunch time. And they need to have like an immediate reaction to it and know that it's coming rather than kind of taking half a quarter to adjust to it and then eventually kind of breaking through. That's what happened on that Jaylen Brown 3 night. Is eventually like he still was late to kind of figure out how to split that double team and then get it to Horford. I think he needs to be faster in recognizing that when that's coming, so they can take advantage. But you're right. If it's just him focused on kind of making baskets, then he's not looking to pass in those situations. He's looking to create for himself, which I think can be kind of add to that problem.
Let's get into the Horford thing because I've been all about Al Horford. I love Al Horford. I think he obviously makes his team better. But as Mike Dinan says on Twitter with the hashtag #RainandJays, I love Horford, but the past 3 games, he has only 19 points on 8 of 26 field goals with 16 rebounds, scored more than 12 points once in the past 12 games. What is wrong?
I don't have an easy answer for that one. I feel like he's a little bit hesitant on his shot, and that's making it go in less. But he had some good looks tonight. He had some open threes that you've seen him knock down. You saw him with some nice like moves in the post. So I don't know what the exact issue is. It feels like he's kind of going through some confidence, and that may be affecting his shot-making ability. But I don't know. I can't see anything that's like glaring to me in terms of his struggles. It's just his shots not falling, and now we saw him like 1-3 tonight. He just basically tried to push towards the rim, but I don't, other than that, I don't know. I can't see any like technical issue with what he's doing wrong.
Yeah, I don't know that he's doing anything particularly wrong. Let's go back to the Toronto game. The one thing that he is doing wrong, quote unquote, is that in the Toronto game, he wasn't looking for his shot at all. He shot it 5 times in that game and once in the fourth quarter. And by the way, only once in the fourth quarter tonight as well. That needs to stop. That needs to go away. Al Horford needs to be more aggressive when he's out there. And I know that he's not an aggressive offensive type of player. He is one of the best passing big men in the league right now, but we need him to be more than that. We need him to take pressure off of Isaiah Thomas with the shot. And so one of the problems I had in the Toronto game was a lot of times he was coming off of there were pick and roll plays. There were some handoffs. There were different plays where he had the ball. He put it on the floor, and he didn't even once look at the basket. And that just minimizes him as a threat. When you're a defender and you know that you only have to play him for the pass, that means that you can play the other guy, Isaiah Thomas, off of the pick and roll, or whomever he's playing with on the pick and roll, you can play him differently. You can attack that player knowing that Horford is only looking to pass and he's not looking to aggressively take a shot. When Al Horford is a threat, and that really only needs to be a threat, then that changes how the defense reacts to the rest of the offense. So my biggest problem with Horford is his unwillingness to be the threat. I don't need him to be shooting 20 times a game. I just need a defense to think if you leave Al Horford, he might shoot the ball. Right now, they don't think that he might shoot the ball because he won't shoot the ball. That's a big problem. Whether the ball goes in or not, I have faith that the ball will go in eventually, but he's just not shooting enough for it to fall. So he needs to shoot. He just needs to keep on shooting.
You know what? I think we saw the Celtics kind of try to do that early in the first quarter. He had the first couple possessions of the game were him on the low block, and I think he did a better – he had more actual attempts from three tonight, and I think it was a reason why their offense was a little bit better in terms of ball movement in the first half. But it kind of makes sense just psychologically if he kind of opens the game and has missed his first 10 shots or is two for nine – I don't know. It takes a kind of like a real confidence and mentality just to keep shooting with if you're not confident it's going to go in. So I'm with you. I think eventually he has to basically shoot his way out of this slump and continue to be aggressive, just because the very threat of him shooting opens up the offense and minimizes everything. And it goes back to the kind of point I was making earlier about the blitzing, that pick and pop move, and him being able to just nail that three pointer after the pick and roll is basically the best antidote to Isaiah being double teamed on that pick. So if that's not even a remote option of just like kind of that drop off to him, the Celtics offense becomes so much worse and so much less effective and so much easier to stop. So I don't know what the solution is other than just he's got to chuck it. Him and like Kelly Olynyk need to go to some sort of hypnotist or immersion therapy and just whenever they get the ball in their hands with any sort of space, just be jacking threes. Maybe Antoine Walker needs to be brought in.
We need one of those Disney movies where Antoine Walker and Kelly Olynyk and Al Horford are all peeing into a fountain and lightning strikes the fountain and they have his mentality and he has theirs. And then that would have been an amazing trio. But
and then like a good training montage in that with all of them kind of becoming best friends and then making a lot of 3-point baskets. I think we got a screenplay right here.
There we go. Let's do it. People who know how to write movies, do it. This is it. I do not know how to write movies. So that's Al Horford. Isaiah Thomas is who he is, and he's going to keep doing this. And I think if the rest of the team does what they're supposed to do, then Isaiah Thomas will have better games than 1 of 7 from three and 10 of 23 overall. But still, Isaiah had 33 points against the Pistons, 5 of 12 from three, which is 42% almost, which it sounds weird. For the people who don't buy into the analytics, you say 5 of 12 from 3, that's terrible. But it's almost 42%, that's amazing. So a nice night for him from 3, not necessarily from 2. But if the rest of the Celtics offense can do what it's supposed to do in the fourth quarter, he will have even better games. So here's a question that I saw on Twitter that is not on the Rain and Jays, but I'm going to ask it anyway. If Avery Bradley is back for the Celtics against the Hawks, they're at home against the Hawks Monday night. If Avery Bradley is back, does he start at the two, or should they start Jaylen Brown at the two and bring Avery Bradley off the bench? Is this an opportunity to bring Avery Bradley off the bench, boost the bench scoring, and have Smart and Bradley come in as your 1-2 off of the bench and kind of boost that unit?
I don't think Avery Bradley, even if he's ready to play tomorrow, is going to start, because that's feels like when Brad Stevens plays guys coming back from injury, he never starts them. But it's an interesting question long term, because I was especially thinking this down the stretch. Jaylen Brown provides some really nice size for the Celtics, and he can play and defend basically 1 through 4 at this point. It feels like he definitely is much better while playing with the starters. And at this point, I would favor kind of having Avery Bradley come off the bench and be in that second unit with Marcus Smart, just because it feels like you're getting the most out of Jaylen Brown when he's playing with better players. And I wouldn't want to mess that up at this point. And I don't really I think that bench unit needs more of a scoring push, because we saw, I think, at the start of the second quarter of this game, they had like a scoreless drought of 4 or 5 minutes. That unit sometimes really struggles to score the basketball, and that feels like the perfect time for Avery Bradley to kind of knock down those long twos and run those come off screens and do those kind of what Avery Bradley normally does in the first quarter. If you can have him do that and like come out and score 8 points just to start off the second quarter, it feels like the exact boost this offense is needing when Isaiah's on the bench. So if he's your kind of six-man scoring type with Marcus Smart or Rozier as the main ball handler, I think that's a workable lineup. So I would be in favor of keeping Avery on the bench.
Yeah, and I feel like every team that has a starter that's been out for a while that's playing well, you start to have that question about, well, maybe we'll just keep him out, or you figure something else. But I do really like Jaylen Brown with the starters, because he is so raw and because he needs that extra boost. I feel like it's better now that he's here, now that we've gotten to this point where the Celtics are still the second seed and they've played so well generally without Bradley. I think this is an opportunity to put Brown at the two, to have him benefit from playing off of Isaiah, off of Horford, off of Jay Crowder, to kind of be almost like the forgotten guy and to have all of that space, because all of those guys need to be respected from three. I think that is a great opportunity to maximize Jaylen Brown's potential. And Jaylen Brown had a really nice night tonight. He had 13 points. He was a plus 13. He shot almost 56%. He hit both of his three-pointers, which is really kind of crazy. He had a really, really good night. And, of course, it was against the Pistons, and the Pistons are not good. But why not? Why not take this opportunity to keep Avery Bradley on the bench? This is a chance for Brad Stevens to say, okay, we're going to bring Avery back. We're going to integrate him slowly. And if he comes in off of the bench and he plays with that second unit and he bolsters that second unit, then you can do that. And then you can still play him down the stretch in fourth quarters in a big defensive lineup with him and Marcus. If you play offense defense, you take Isaiah out and you put him and Marcus in as your backcourt, you can do that. But I like the idea. I like the idea of Avery Bradley providing an offensive boost off of the bench and also a defensive boost off the bench, because those second quarters can be problematic for the Celtics this year.
Yeah, it's just going to be nice for the Celtics to kind of not have to play James Young for 6 minutes in a game, or not have to. It just adds to their depth and just the quality of players in the rotation. But I was thinking of, like, during crunch time, the thing that I feel makes Jaylen Brown more valuable than, I guess, Avery Bradley in this scenario is you're down the stretch, you're going to want to play, unless you can kind of really, really focus on offense, defense, you're going to want to have Isaiah Thomas in the game, and you're going to want to have Marcus Smart in the game, because as we saw tonight, he just does crazy shit that helps your team win. And putting Avery Bradley next to Isaiah Thomas and Marcus Smart is not a really – we saw those three-guard lineups earlier in the season. It's not something that works just because of the size. You need someone with Jaylen Brown's length and athleticism and just general size to kind of combat the lack of rebounding and just bolster the defense. So I don't know. I think kind of the Celtics' ability to win games and the emergence of Jaylen Brown definitely makes Bradley more tradable, especially in the offseason, because I feel like it's not – for a long term, it doesn't make sense to have all three of those guards. But in the short term, it just helps to have more talented people playing, just because that's never really hurt any basketball team. The Celtics have been way better when all their people have been healthy this year. It's not a problem, but I think it's a sign in the future that Avery Bradley may not be kind of a long-term person on the Celtics roster.
Yeah, which is weird to say because he's, you know, first-team all-defense. He's emerged as the second-best offensive player for the Celtics, but I think when it comes down to the Celtics – in 2 or 3 years being a championship contender, I don't know that Avery Bradley is on that team. So, but I agree that Jaylen Brown, his size, if against DeMar DeRozan, once Brown becomes a more seasoned NBA veteran, his size against a guy like DeMar DeRozan will be phenomenal. I think he did a pretty good job early in that game. And once he gets more comfortable in the NBA, he'll do a pretty good job defensively against guys like that. And they need that size. The Celtics need that size. I know everybody's talking about small ball all the time, but you still need some size in the NBA to, I think, ultimately size with that athleticism combats a lot of things that are going wrong. Okay, so... what else is there from tonight's game? Jonas Jereb, go ahead.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Jonas Jerebko hasn't made a shot since he's put on that mask.
It's terrible. It's terrible. Like, at the end of the game, he took the mask off. On the last possession of the game, he went out there and took the mask off. So, he hates that thing. He hates it. Abby Chin asked him, she tweeted about it, ask him on a scale of 1 to 10 how much he dislikes it. He said it's a 9. That's how much he hates that mask. He's been terrible with that mask. He can't hit a shot. I think somebody tweeted it. I'm going to go back to the Rain and Jays here. Jerebko, maybe not. Maybe it's just somewhere else on Twitter that I saw it. Jerebko is shooting like 20% since he put that mask on.
Something for like 3 for 18 or something. Something absurdly not good. And if Jerebko's like really only useful on the offensive end in his ability to stretch the floor, like he's 50% 3-point shots, 50% hustle. And if you just take away his vision and thus his shooting, you're basically just getting a 6'8" guy who tries really hard but is not that talented. So it's not ideal for the Celtics because, like you said, they need some size, and he's not the best defender. He's not the greatest person, but he's just like size off the bench matters, and if he can't be an effective offensive player, he's really kind of useless.
Yeah, and people forget he's 6'10". He's a huge guy. He's a huge guy. And so for him to be that big and to be out there and hitting threes when he can hit threes is a big deal. So we need to get that mask off him. They need to come up with some other sort of nose protection that is not a mask, because that mask is killing him. So get that
done. There's got to be some sort of mask prototyping. It's like they just partnered with GE. They need to get some sort of Jack Donaghy special there in the lab. Like something needs to happen for them, because I've seen other people, other players in the league. It was Rip Hamilton tonight. He famously wore a mask that just
– He wore a mask.
Looks super obtrusive. They got to downsize that somehow.
Rip Hamilton wore a mask well beyond his well beyond it was necessary. So he wore that mask for ages when he could have just let it go.
It was like a cosmetic mask.
Yeah. So it's not – you can get used to it, but – Jarebko just hates it. He hates it. They need something. There's got to be some other, like, you can put something else around his face that straps to his head. There has to be something that's not a big damn mask that will allow him to play basketball. Like, this is the time. They say necessity is the mother of invention. Well, we have a necessity now, people. Somebody fill this and create a nose protector that allows Jonas Jerebko to be Jonas Jerebko again. Because this mask thing is just shitty. It's terrible. All right. Well,
one last thing I wanted to say. It's not that long, but I thought Jay Crowder had a sneaky good game tonight. Normally he's the guy who's hitting all the threes, but he grabbed a double-double, 11 boards, 14 points, and half of those points came from the free throw line, so I thought he did a pretty good job of getting to the line and generating some offense when there really wasn't some. And I just wanted to point that out because we didn't mention his name once tonight.
No, that makes him a mystery machine candidate. And at some point during this week, we'll do a mystery machine again, and maybe he'll get a seat in there. But that's true. And I think maybe the ankle issues could be going away for him. He's been aggressive and attacking over the past couple of games, which is nice to see. So it'll be great to see Jay Crowder getting to the rim again. I feel like I'm not saying he fell in love with the three, but I think that the ankle injury has kind of kept him away from the basket. So maybe the All-Star break, that week off, kind of helped him out, maybe. So, good game from Jay Crowder. Good game from the Celtics in the end, ultimately, because they won. They beat the Pistons. Next up for the Celtics, they play the Atlanta Hawks Monday night. So, we're sitting here. We're talking about this team on a Monday. This is the Monday podcast. We're here Monday through Friday. Monday night, the Celtics take on the Atlanta Hawks. An opportunity to put some distance between them and another possible opponent in the East. And then they've got the Cavs on Wednesday and the Lakers late Friday night as the Celtics head out west for a bit of a stretch next week. So, tough loss against the Raptors. It pissed me off that they lost against the Raptors, but they bounced back against the Pistons, and then hopefully they can hold on to that second seed. We're going to be here to talk about it throughout all of it, even that West Coast trip. Somehow we'll figure it out. I feel like I'm putting a lot of pressure on everybody else because I'm not so sure I'm going to be awake for a podcast at that point, but we'll figure it out somehow. All right. Subscribe to us, everybody. If you are not a subscriber, search Locked On Celtics. However it is that you got here, you can search Locked On Celtics. Subscribe to it on your favorite app or go to the Audio Boom page that we post on a regular basis. There is an RSS feed. You can grab that and put it into your favorite podcatching app. Do it that way. If you are a subscriber and you haven't rated us 5 stars, please do that. You can really help us out. That's a way to give back to us. We're here Monday through Friday for you. Give back to us by subscribing and rating us 5 stars. That boosts our listenership. It boosts our reach. And then, you know, advertisers will want to give us money. And that's how we get at least our drinking money for the month. So, or if you drink like me, for a day. So, that's it. Thanks for listening, everybody. This has been the Locked On Celtics Podcast. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network.